number 19 for December 15th, 2005. Robert, once again, cannot join us, but we do have a guest host or a new host for this episode, Dan from Washington State. He's going to be joining us in this episode, and if it all works out good, maybe some future episodes. But I do want to start off with a Merry Christmas from the RIAA. They just put in 751 copyright infringement lawsuits in the mail today. So 751 people will be getting a nice letter from the RIAA for downloading different things. So that's just great.
I think we should start off, Dan, if you don't mind, just telling a little bit about yourself. Also, Dale's here as usual, and so am I, Jeff. So, Dan, if you want to, if you will, just give us a little background on yourself.
Okay. I guess my name's Dan.
Yeah.
Right. I'm 17, Washington State. I've lived here my whole life, and I guess I got into computers because of my brothers back when I was, you know, a wee one. And right now, I guess I'm big on like programming and security, network security stuff, and just everything computers, I guess.
What do you do? What do you program in?
C++, PHP. I forgot most of the Visual Basic stuff, but
that's good. Nothing wrong with that.
I could go back.
And that's pretty cool.
It's fun. Yep.
All right, then I guess. Getting some topics, but glad to have you here. It changed change of pace. So, but so one thing, a big story in the Linux community is Linus Torvalds, the if you don't know, the inventor of the Linux kernel and Linux in general. He's now telling users to use KDE. He's saying that the reason is because GNOME is really trying to push. Usability and getting, you know, dumbing it down so it's, you know, keep it simple, stupid, and trying to keep it as simple as possible. But in doing so, they're making it too simple, and that people are losing features and usability. And for like normal users, like normal Linux users, they can't do stuff they want to do because they're trying to make it too simple. And so Linus got in a real big fight with Jeff Waugh, who, if you remember from last episode, me and Dale were talking about, or two episodes ago, we were talking about Jeff Waugh. We saw him at our local Linux user group. He gave a nice presentation. But online, I'll post the link. They have, I think, the message board of their, when they're infighting, talking about the interface and GNOME and everything. It's really interesting. I switched back to GNOME, but and I'm happy with it so far. But I don't know. Cause I think the real problem with Linux is just the X window system itself. It's really old and archaic. Is what I think.
Well, I actually, after reading that, I emerged KDE as well. So I was comparing the differences, and after going back and playing with it, I think I like KDE a lot more. Because at first I was more of a fan of GNOME. I liked just the way it looked. It looked a lot better. But once I got the NVIDIA drivers installed, it looked great on KDE. But a lot of the menus are not very nice in GNOME, and messing with preferences tends to be a little iffy. And file browsing is just plain annoying because it's nothing like Conqueror. Conqueror works great for browsing files.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be really one standard for the for browsing. Like sometimes it'll pop up like in different windows, which is real annoying, or it'll be like an Explorer kind of window.
Yeah. They're definitely different, but there seems to just be a lot more support behind KDE and a lot more applications. I mean, some of them are kind of useless, but there's a lot of definitely a lot of support.
We'll see where this goes.
Yeah, there's a lot of projects to try to help that, but it's definitely important that Linux tries to get its stuff together because a lot of people are very unsure about Vista and everything that Microsoft's doing right now.
I'm much more confident in Vista now that they've turned around their whole process of development, and since they put it off, it might be a lot more stable than it would have been if it had come out like next year, 2007.
When is it supposed to come out?
2008 as the earliest I've seen.
Ouch. 2008, that's 7 years after a major... After their last release. That's pathetic.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah.
So there'll probably be another two releases of OS X by then.
I don't know. Well, I heard it coming out maybe sooner. I have the widget up. I have the countdown to when the first date. It's now it's at 381 days. That's at next January.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that they pushed it back again. Wow.
Hopefully not. And just since you're picking up the KDE and GNOME, I watch Nerd TV every once in a while. And in the first episode with Andy Hertzfeld, he pronounces it GNOME.
Yeah. We talked about, me and Dale talked about that with, when we saw Jeff Watt. They started off the Linux meeting, and I went to a meeting last night, which I'll quickly talk about. But they always start the meeting off with whatever they're talking about. They'll ask everyone either what it stands for or how it's pronounced. And they started this meeting pronouncing how you pronounce GNOME and Ubuntu, and that's how they're pronounced, GNOME and Ubuntu. So
yeah, okay. I personally just prefer to say GNOME just because it's a lot less awkward than saying GNOME. It's just a strange word to say, so. Since there's so much discrepancy, I'll get away with it.
Sorry.
I mean, I'm just saying nothing else is going to be called GNOME anyways. So.
Last night I went to our local Linux user group that me and Dale go to. We went to the one last month. Dale couldn't make it with me last night, but they did three different separate small seminars presentations. One was on environmental variables, which was pretty interesting. But it was kind of way above my head because I don't use Linux all that much. And that a lot of them were people who were programming and scripting for Linux. So I don't really do much of that. And they talked about RSS, just the history and some of the different versions. And it was pretty interesting to talk about, like, there's like different version numbers, but they're all numbered very odd, and it was very interesting. And how it's named. Everyone, like, I thought, you know, and everyone says, you know, that RSS stands for really simple syndication. But that was for version like 0.92, and then for another one, it changed for something to something else. And now they did it like, so it doesn't stand for anything. Kind of like SAT, like stand for, you know, it used to stand for what, standard aptitude test or.
Scholastic aptitude test.
And yeah. Now SAT stands for SAT. So now RSS just stands for RSS. And then one more thing they talked about was a game, kind of like a Command and Conquer kind of game. I'm not a real big gamer, but like people who are into, like, I guess, Dungeons and Dragons and that kind of stuff, this was kind of up their alley. It's called The Battle for Westnoth, WESNOTH. And it was pretty interesting. It runs, but the really amazing thing about this game is that the support for operating systems was amazing. They had a list of probably 10 OSs, and like four I never even heard of. And the four were like these like Palm kind of based operating systems, like handheld. So it was really interesting. So I'll put links up. So for that.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
Well, talking about RSS. Internet Explorer has adopted Firefox's icon for RSS. They claim to make it universal, to make it not as confusing for different users. Just have a universal icon for RSS feeds.
I heard they were working on it, but I didn't know if it was set in stone.
Oh, I don't know if it's set in stone. I just read an article about it.
I heard that they were going to work together on making a standardized one. I like the one that is used for Apple, the blue one that says RSS. I think it's simple and nice.
Mm, yeah, I mean,
All right, another thing going along with internet development is Ruby on Rails is now at version 1.0. And you can get that on rubyonrails.org. And that's something I definitely really want to look into. Like, Dale has a Ruby book and has been trying to program in Ruby. Is that right, Dale?
Yes, it is.
And so, but a lot of a lot of places are saying, you know, Ruby and Rails, it's the really next best thing, and it really looks like it, and it, like really fast web development and really powerful stuff. And so definitely check that out with, you know, yeah, other things.
The whole Ruby language and the Ruby on Rails framework really lets you set up things very quickly, make changes very quickly, add features very quickly, and it's just a great way to develop.
Yeah, there's some great videos on rubyonrails.org that they have showing, and how they can get like a site up just with only a few lines of code, and it's all, you know, just it's pretty amazing and pretty fast, and it's even on in the one Wired article a few months ago when they interviewed Bill O'Reilly. That's one thing he said, that's on his watch list. But did you watch Dan? Did you watch The Last Nerd TV?
11?
Yeah.
No. I haven't been keeping up.
No. Have you watched the other ones?
I'm up to 8, I believe.
Yeah, the last one was on... Eight is Adrian Miller. Adrian Miller.
Yeah.
But I really like Nerd TV. When he first started, he was getting one out a week. But then now, like, every time it goes, it's a bigger and bigger gap.
Yeah, well, it's tough to get a hold of people like that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I know. And
but yeah, I really like it because you get to see like more professional people like interviewed and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the people he interviews are the biggest names in, you know, the computer field, technology field. Like, these people have, you know, definitely all, most of these people have changed. It's not all, these people have changed our world, you know.
Yeah, like Max with PayPal and Bill Joy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And Brewster Kahle, and he with the Internet Archive, and then Tim O'Reilly, Dave Weiner, you know, RSS right there, and Dan Drake, you know, with Autodesk through AutoCAD. Well, the one girl, Anina, in episode 9, she's just someone. She's not really someone who has invented anything, but she really definitely. She's someone who's probably coming up, and she's a model, supermodel, but she talks about really, she's really extremely smart and talks about all this new technology with phones, and she's really amazing and interesting. And you have Dan Bricklin, inventor of VisiCalc, and then now Doug Engelhart, he's the inventor of the computer mouse and really got the kind of ball rolling for graphical user interfaces even before Xerox PARC.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so...
Both guys.
I love the show. Like, have you seen any of other Robert Cringely's videos?
No.
Oh, he has a really great one called Triumph of the Nerds, and it just does. It's a 3-part series. So altogether, it's 3 hours long, but it talks about the whole history of the personal computer and stuff, and it covers, you know, Apple and Microsoft and the Altair and a whole bunch of stuff, and then the graphical user interface and Xerox PARC, and it's a really great thing. You can find it on BitTorrent.
Okay, I'll look it up.
Yeah, just search like TorrentSpy or something. Mm-hmm. I'm not advocating that.
Oh, of course not.
But it's public broadcasting, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's free.
Yeah. So if you download it, you know, donate some money and get a free tote bag. And then going along with famous computer people who have changed our lives is Steve Wozniak, or Woz, is going to be on the History Channel. He's hosting a new show called Modern Marvels Invent Now Challenge. And you can compete to receive $25,000 grant to have an invention. And it's kind of like a mini series, like, you know, like kind of like a reality kind of show, but with Modern Marvels, and Steve Wozniak is, I believe, hosting it. And so I think I'm definitely going to watch that. Woz is definitely one of my, I guess, heroes.
Do you know any examples of what they're going to cover?
I'm trying to, here, I'm bringing up the History Channel site right now. You can still enter. You can still enter now. So even if you have something you want to invent, you can still try to sign up online. But check it out at historychannel.com. Well, Yona, it's supposed to be released January 6th, and from what I was reading some specs last night, and they said that it's going to be dual core, and it's going to have like 30% more processing power, but use 28% less power than the current chips right now, and it even has the ability to, if say one core is doing a really big calculation, it can turn off the other core, or just power it, clock it down, so it can put more energy towards the one core. And I think that's pretty
amazing.
I was
actually hearing the same thing about the quad, the dual core, that it was using the same type of technology. I think it was in the Maccast that were saying it, either that or in Gadget podcast, but they were saying there's some very interesting power features go along with it.
I think it's gonna be really interesting to see these PowerBooks and iBooks, if they come out in January, or any Intel-based laptops that are based off these new 64-bit chips and dual core. I wonder how, the engineering inside on the motherboard must be astonishing, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're going to have, a lot more addressing lines, bigger buses and stuff. Mm-hmm. So to compensate for 64-bit, and I think it's going to be pretty amazing. And I don't know. Corey, you said you were going to buying a new computer before?
I'm thinking about it, and if I do, the next PC I buy, I found a cool one on Newegg. It's like a 64-bit processor, 200 gig hard drive, gig of RAM. It comes with a DVRW, CDRW. Just really cool
system. What happened to you thinking about getting a Mac?
That was a good idea.
It was a good idea. I'm still thinking about it.
But Corey doesn't like good ideas. He's not.
Dale. Shut up. Dan, what's your preference?
Well, I'm a PC guy just because I'm really used to Windows. I mean, I've always been using it, and that's probably the only reason. But also, I like to customize. Like, I can get a PC for super cheap, and like, if I wanted new parts for, like, I can replace stuff and upgrade for cheap compared to getting a new Mac, right?
Exactly. Like, I'll probably get a Mac when I get a job, which hopefully will be soon. And then I can afford to get one of the higher end ones.
When the Intel version of the Mac OS comes out, then I'll probably put it on just my PC.
Well, you can
not quite.
Well, Apple's not going to be releasing it as a standalone software thing. That's a good thing.
Lame.
That's a very good thing.
That's a very good thing. It's good that the Mac operating system stays only on Macs.
Picture that running on your average Dell.
You're going to lose the whole Mac experience if you put it on a different computer.
How come?
Well, there's just, you don't, do you, like, Mac users are just different, different type of people. Like,
okay, but why would the hardware reflect that? We'll put this in Windows terms. It's like running Windows XP on a 486.
But no, it's an aesthetics thing. Like, you have a nice, like, on my desk here, I use a Mac Mini. I have this nice small silver and white box with my nice white keyboard, but a Dell monitor. But it looks very nice. And then you can have a nice power Mac sitting under you. This big silver with this, these holes in it. It looks beautiful. And then you have these PowerBooks. I have a PowerBook sitting next to me. It's a nice, silver, beautiful computer. But then if I look to my other side, I have this shitty Dell that's black, and there you can have a beige box. Running a Mac OS on that is not going to – it just – you lose the ambiance.
You can get – yeah, just get a cool case. I mean,
no,
you
but
can
the Mac,
get a nice
– but Apple makes the best cases. They just look different. They're cool.
eBay.
The other thing is, though, that you lose a lot if you go for another manufacturer, because a lot of times they definitely skimp on components, and it's not like they're going to be able to say, okay, we'll license it to the really good companies, but then the other ones will be like, no, because there would definitely be some problems in trying to do that.
And Apple makes some really stellar hardware. Like, if you look in the inside, if you ever have the privilege to open up a Power Mac G5. Preferably one of the ones that, not the quads, because they have these huge heat sinks because they're water cooled. But one of the older ones, you look at it, it's just amazing engineering and how they do things and what like what they put. The thing that I love about Apple is they put just small details in that normal people would forget about, like these small things. And if you can pick up them, they're amazing. Like just
well, yeah, but what you're saying,
the board is designed. It's amazing how it looks.
Yeah, but all you're talking about is looks, and for the price of a Power Mac, you can get what 3-4 times the processing speed and the power in a PC that you could get for what you pay for a Mac.
That's
yeah,
quite
$2,000.
That's quite a misconception though, because like as you're seeing now with all the processors, they're changing dual core, 64-bit, yada yada. Yeah, you're getting more clock speed, but power definitely not.
Well,
like, look at most of the Athlons; they're outperforming most of the Pentium 4s. And yeah, they're clocked lower, but they definitely have more features and they're
yeah,
a better processor.
I only use AMDs. So.
You can't just look at the clock speed and then say that's the whole computer. You can't, because you have to figure in L1 cache, L2 cache. Bus speed, like other things, and how much memory you can address. You can have a 64-bit computer, but you can still maybe only have support up to 4 gigabytes of RAM. The current Macs can, the Power Macs can support up to 16 gigabytes of RAM, and 4 terabytes of virtual memory. But
but I wanted to tell you something that I was messing around and gawking over a Power Mac at the website, and I put 16 gigs of memory in it, and what is that, like $3,000?
Apple's memory is extremely overpriced. You go to Crucial, and it's much better.
Yeah, if you're going to upgrade memory in your Mac, definitely do it yourself.
But there's some really cool in the new Power Mac. I don't want to sound like just like there's nothing that Mac hardware is best, and then I'm just looking at one side. I don't want to act like Bill O'Reilly, but in the computer sense. But if you look at the I'm just saying, for a Mac-wise, saying if the hardware is not bad. Like, other companies make great hardware, but Apple does it really well, too. If the newest quad uses this new DDR2 memory, which is faster because they can do more every time if you're familiar with how the processor clock works, it makes, like, little kind of, like, bumps, but they're, like, you know, like square bumps. And they're called rises and they go and drops. So every time the clock sends a clock signal, it makes a little, it goes up and then back down, and it's like kind of a box. Every time your DDR, just DDR RAM, every time when it goes up, it'll send out data and send it back in. But with new DDR2 RAM, if the motherboard can support it, it'll take data in at the beginning of the clock cycle and at the end of the clock cycle. So you're getting twice at the same and the same at the same clock speed. So that's the new feature in the new Power Macs, which really will speed up your computer. There's some other things with latency, but it's still really fast. Then other PCI Express, it's a really fast computer, but you know, there's also hardware manufacturers for PCs, science, and Intel who make some really great things too. So, but the hardware is really good for it too.
Yeah. See, I think the only problem is, like, the reason I don't use Macs is just for the cost, because, like, I spend about $200 every 5 years on my PC.
Oh, all right.
So,
I'm way different. I know how you feel, trust me.
Yeah. Although, I will say that when you have a Mac, it will tend to last longer, though, right?
Oh, definitely.
Because, you know, people aren't creating spyware and the stuff to bog down your computer. You're not having to constantly reformat it.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, Jeff, isn't one of the features that it automatically defrags the hard drive when it's not in use or something like that?
Yeah, well, Unix will, how they have it set up, it'll, every time you install a program, it'll,
optimize.
It'll optimize. There's not really defragging in how the whole file allocation tables work. They don't really, it doesn't really need to be defragged. Normally it'll defrag it maybe when the computer is not being used or in the wee hours, but it'll do something kind of like it. But it's not like as massive as doing the Windows defrag, which is a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, it takes a while.
Yeah, but with Linux, like running on the same kind of hardware of a PC, you really don't need to do it either. So it's more of the OS that's what does it, and the how you format the hard drive. But I don't know. We go into these rants about Apple's too much.
Yeah, well, there's nothing else to talk about.
I don't know. Sorry. I got last night, the one friend who I went with the Linux meeting last night, he was telling me how Microsoft is not a bad company and how they there's nothing wrong with Windows, and I started shouting.
Yeah, he told me the same thing today during physics.
It gets me very upset. I have no problem, you know, they just for having such a big market share, they could make something that's better.
Well, he was looking from a business point, and he was like, "How do they make any money?" I'm like, "They have their ways."
Yeah, no. So.
Well, when you look at Bill Gates is a good businessman, but I don't think he's the right person to be the CEO of that company.
That's good because he's not the CEO. He's the chief technology. Technologist thing. It's Steve Ballmer, but no,
he's the face of Microsoft.
Definitely, Ballmer and Gates are probably running the company the wrong direction. I don't think the stockholders probably know well. But Dan, any news over there near Redmond?
Not that I know of. Nothing out. Not like in the papers, but
near any? Do you live near any Microsoft developers or employees?
You have a lot of people, like. Yeah, there's people around here with relatives and such. And yeah, it's not uncommon.
What do you think about Microsoft?
Great to put on the spot.
Yeah. I
won't yell.
I guess I use their stuff, so I guess it's okay for me.
What do you use to program C++, and do you use Visual Studio?
At the moment, yeah, because it's the best compiler out there. The new one, the beta.
So do you use Visual C++? Do you use Visual C++?
Yeah, Visual C++ 2005.
Have you ever tried the GNU C compiler, the GCC?
I haven't been able to get my Linux box steady, stable, I mean.
What distro?
So I haven't... Well, I have a bunch on hand, but I was... trying to get Ubuntu to work. Ubuntu.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. But for development, I don't think it. I really don't like it too much. But it's a really to get to know Linux, it's good.
Yeah, my cousin as a science major uses it like Java development. So
very cool. Yeah, me and Dale are Java programmers.
Cool.
I don't really like it.
Don't
like to admit
not.
It. All right, well, I guess...
Java's going nowhere.
Yeah.
But, okay, yeah.
Well, I guess we should end it
here.
Wrap it up. Dan, we thank you for being here, and if come back again if you can.
Yeah.
Yes, and so if you get a new mic and get some use out of it, it was fun having you here.
Yeah, since Robert has deserted us.
Yeah, well, Robert will come back, but Dan, please join us anytime you wish. So... With that, thank you and good night.